Right, at 6:10, we're gonna go ahead and start the meeting. Start off with a roll call, and then we'll start down there with Harrison.
Andy Berg here.
John Poole here.
Brian Thomas here.
Jeff Wingle here.
Monica Uhas here.
Daniel Gaskin here.
And Amanda Medweski is excused. Do you have any citizens' comments? Citizens' comments, once, twice, one, no citizens' comments. I have no report.
Appreciate everybody being patient. Any members have a report?
Very none.
Communications?
I don't have anything in that department either, but someone else has something.
Has anyone had a chance to overlook the minutes besides myself, the one making motion to approve? Motion to approve the minutes?
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All right. Yeah, resolution requesting the state legislature increase in the penalties for harming or killing law enforcement. Supervisor Decker?
Thank you, good evening. So this resolution started as me reading an article regarding penalties on canines, and I emailed the sheriff and asked him if he would be interested in working on a resolution together to ask the state legislature to increase the penalties for harming or killing a canine deputy. So he forwarded that to Deputy Tipped, who emailed me back a long email regarding his thoughts on it, and I pretty much took his thoughts and comments and turned it into resolution form because I thought what he wrote was exactly what I was looking for. So that's about it. I know I talked to Representative Medweski on this issue, and they have something in the state legislature right now, but it's not going to be brought up for various issues. So she said that she will, the next session, if she's reelected, she will definitely work on bringing this up. They want it to be, because currently it is a class I felony, and the legislation they have, I'm sorry, is a class H felony, and they want to make it like an I felony, whichever one is one more harsh. And so that's where they're at. So I'd be sending this resolution to the legislature would help them, give them an impetus to possibly get it done next session. Any questions?
Motion to approve.
Second.
Any discussion? Was Deputy Tipped gonna be?
I thought he was, but I guess not.
Okay.
I think he might be here tonight for the full board meeting.
Okay.
That's what I thought.
All right. Is there any discussion on this or any other questions? Hearing none, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Anything governance?
Aye.
Sorry about that. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next item is a resolution to amend municipal code of Kenosha County, Chapter 2, Rules of the County Board.
Good evening, everybody. I'm Andy Phillips. I am a lawyer with the Codis. I work with many counties around the state and the Counties Association. Thank you for having me here tonight. And let me preface our discussion by saying when I've talked with the Corporation Council, Greg Cardamone, over the years, oftentimes it's about either parliamentary procedure, the interplay between parliamentary procedure and state law, or how Kenosha County board rules fit in the entire equation. And so he thought it was actually overdue, but it's time to take a look at the rules, and from the standpoint of just common practice based on my experience with other counties around the state in dealing with their boards and their board rules, and both in terms of providing an objective outside view of what does this rule mean and what are we trying to accomplish, to to really take a look at board rights and say that the project that I've undertaken over the course of the past couple of months is really going through the board rules and not changing necessarily the way that the board wants to do business, but perhaps suggesting some clarifications to what you have within the board rules to hopefully make it a little easier to both understand the rules and apply those rules as written. So that's what you have before you. I'm not going to presume that everybody has been through the rules with a fine-tooth comb. If you have, congratulations. That means that you were able to stay awake for an extended period of time, and you deserve congratulations for that. But I do want to hit some highlights in terms of the suggested edits to the rules. And then you'll see embedded within there are a couple of comments from me as it relates to decision points for the board, because ultimately I want to reinforce the point that Section 59.03 of the statute says that you all, as the Kenosha County Board, get to govern your internal affairs the way you best see fit. So these are your rules. These aren't anything where I pull them off a shelf and say, this is what you ought to do. These are your rules. And so I view my job at a couple of things. Number one, make sure you're legally compliant. But number two, to really take what it is that you want to do in terms of the way that you do business and make sure that it is contained within these board rules to allow you to do that business. So, do we have somebody who wants to
speak? You know what, Andy, is it okay if I,
absolutely,
if I sway away?
I have often taken the back seat to dogs, so I am good. Yeah. Come on in, Deputy.
Sorry for interrupting.
No, come on in and introduce us to your partner there.
Thank you for the visit. This is K-9 Riggs.
How is he doing?
He's doing actually really good. Doing really good. Getting old. Like me, but hanging in there.
Yeah. Through everything you went through, is there kind of retraining therapy that
no,
you go back through?
I had to do all that because that was
fun. Yeah.
So,
I can say this because it's so friendly. You lost your hair over that retraining.
Yeah. Yeah. No. There's a lot of this job that made that happen.
Yeah. Yeah. So we just discussed and voted on the resolution that I, you are free to share, because my understanding is that a lot of what is shared in the body of this resolution came from you. So if you want to make it more of a personal note on why you think this is important and how that you work with Supervisor Decker and creating this, feel free to share that.
We're talking the fundraising, right?
No, the penalties.
The penalties.
The canine penalties.
Oh, yeah. The penalties are, if you work long enough with a dog, you become, he's family to me. So if somebody were to hurt him, it's like hurting one of my kids or one of my family members. And I just think personally that I don't think the penalties are severe enough. Riggs did what he did selfishly, and his actions saved not only my life but the lives of other deputies. And who knows if that suspect would have made it to Highway 50, the public could have been in even more danger than they were. So, to me, I always thought when the canine gets hurt like that, the penalty should be more severe. And if you paid attention to the news and saw Florida, our canine was just shot and killed. So it seems to be happening more and more. And I don't think just don't get returned. That's my thing.
Sure. Does anyone have any questions? Anyone here as well that's not on the committee for the committee?
Thank you, Chair.
Sure.
So you how long is Briggs going to serve yet?
That's to be determined. I thought he'd be done by now, to be honest with you. I didn't think he'd serve a day after getting shot. He had to overcome a lot to come back. He had to do a neurological test to make sure. So he can all, when he finds something, we have to testify in court that there's nothing wrong, right? That his brain's not messed up or his senses aren't messed up. So he had overcome a lot to come back. Neurological testing, he had to get seen by the vet to make sure that the vet thought he was capable to do the job. And then I had to take him down to the kennel, and they had to run him through all the paces, tracking, dope work, biting, and then gunfire again. he passed all that, surprisingly to me. I couldn't believe it. And then, yeah, he's still going. He had some arthritis. We gave him some shots that were new for that. He's going. He's in better shape than some of the dogs half his age. We go to trainings all over, and there's dogs there that are 5 years old that he's still out working. So I would like him to go 8 more years because that's when I can go. I know that that's not going to happen, but yeah, I'm thinking this is going to be his last year.
From what I've seen, he was involved in an apprehension last week again, if I'm not mistaken.
2 days ago.
2 days ago.
Yeah.
I'll see time flies.
Yeah.
but your earlier comment, he becomes like a member of your family. My personal opinion is I'd extend that much further. Your working dog is an extension of the officer that handles him.
Correct.
Equal to that officer because he is doing the work of that officer in the line of duty. So the recommendation to the state to improve the laws, expand them appropriately, I think is very appropriate. If you think about soldiers in the war zone, that working dog is an extension of that team. So no different here. And they need to be respected the same way.
I agree 100%.
And I'll tell you, when I put my hand up near your squad, Reese doesn't like that.
Yeah, he's very protective of the squad, but as you can see, like, outside, he really just feeds off my energy. Like, if I'm completely calm like this, then he's calm. But if I start yelling at you guys, he's going to fight up.
Please don't yell at me.
What'd you say?
I'm legitimately terrified.
Thank you for everything.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Deputy, do you mind if I get a picture of you and your dog?
Absolutely.
My kids would love to know that a dog was at my meeting.
You're going to be upstairs later, right?
Yeah, I can be here.
Thank you for your service.
Absolutely. No, and I want to thank you and you for, and whoever else did all the work for this, because it means a lot to me. It really does. My heart was broke when he got shot, and not knowing if, like I told my wife that day, I thought, because I was sitting on my squad and Rick was at the bed, and I didn't know the outcome of what had happened to him. You know, I didn't know if there was any swelling, or there was a lot of swelling in his brain. And, I had to go get my squad later that night after I was done. And I remember just sitting there pausing and looking at my squad and telling my wife, this is my last day. You know, so you get almost another 3 years out of it. You know, still working. I know.
Thank you.
Thank you.
She's going to. Go ahead, we were talking about something else. You're fine.
I'm done.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah.
Appreciate you making time to come on up and introduce him. Briggs to us.
And no problem. Anytime you guys, if you guys ever want to see him, he's always up and about with me. So, yeah. What time do you guys need me upstairs?
7:30 is when the meeting starts.
7:30? Okay. Awesome. Thank you guys.
Thank you. Have a great night.
Take care.
All right, Andy, do you remember where you were?
I think so. It's a pleasant distraction.
If I can, just before you continue, Andy. So so the committee knows, you may have noticed, the materials that were sent out, I guess I'll say as a rough draft. They're not attached as an ordinance yet, and that would be my collective, both on this and on the ethics, that we would have a conversation this evening. There would, I assume, be suggestions and thoughts, and that we will be bringing them back to you again next month for I'll say final committee consideration.
Okay.
If I'm wrong, and people are ready to vote tonight, great. But that is just so you're aware. That's why they're not on an ordinance form. They will essentially both ordinances are going to be more or less identical, which is to say, you know, chapter fill in the blank is repealed and replaced with see attached. So I mean, but just so the committee is aware what my anticipation of the process was going to be.
Yeah, because if I remember correctly, at the executive committee, they wanted to review them a second time before they referred them to the legislature. That was like back in
August
or whatever. They just never got back on the agenda. So reviewing it this for a second time makes absolute sense. So,
And so I think to pick up where I left off, if I skip something that's changed, it's because I view it as not significant, but again, you may disagree. So if there's at any point if you want to discuss any of the suggested edits, then please stop me. Section 2.03 is where we see the first round of edits and a comment from me. Closed session at meetings. Some of the updates contained within 2.03 were to provide additional, in my mind, clarity to what was intended as it relates to closed session. But then I had suggested there's a question about whether a member of the board who is not a member of the committee has the ability to sit in on a closed session. The state statute says you do. You absolutely do. In the absence of a board rule providing otherwise. As legal counsel, we get called in, and oftentimes we meet with committees or boards in closed session, whether it be a personnel matter, an issue that requires closed session for negotiation purposes. For whatever reason, we're in closed session with the committee. My concern when I'm in that situation representing a county is that I'm concerned about maintaining the attorney-client privilege, and I'm also concerned about maintaining confidentiality of the discussions that we have in closed session. For that reason, I prefer a limited number of persons in closed session. And so the question is, does this county board want to consider a rule that would allow a member of the county board who is not a member of the committee to be excused from a committee meeting that convenes in closed session, whether it be by the call of the chair of the committee, by a vote of the committee, or whatever mechanism? Again, you don't have to have that rule, but it's something I've seen other counties do. And so I wanted to raise that for your consideration. Any questions on that?
Is there any, just a personal comment. I like the idea that depending on the topic that committee might be able to vote on whether it's opened up to anybody else on the board. But I'd also like the same thing to apply to staff that aren't directly involved as well.
I think with staff, you have the ability to excuse staff without a rule.
You can.
The statute just recognizes the right of a board member to sit in a closed session of a committee meeting in the absence of a board rule allowing them to be excused.
So I've seen similar things where they're going through a closed session and they'll vote on whether or not to open that up to a board member that might be present,
sure,
or something like that. Does anyone think that's?
I personally like your idea where we can say, yes, they're allowed in unless either the chair or the committee itself votes to not allow someone. It gives us the option depending upon the subject and whatever. We can always not use the option, but it's nice to have the option in there.
And do we prefer a vote process so it's not at the call of the chair, it would be a vote of the committee? Is that what we're
doing? I would think that would make it more fair. I just think there might be somebody who's not on the committee that has some unique expertise on a given subject based on whatever.
Well, state statutes right now allow it.
Right. Well, I'm just saying if they're not on the committee,
they're automatically allowed in.
Right. I'm just saying this way we can decide if, yeah, we're on the same page. Yeah.
Okay, then I can draft something for your consideration at the next meeting that embodies that concept. The other thing you'll notice, this is in 2.03, and frankly throughout these rules, is that I deleted reference to closed session minutes. This is a personal thing. I don't think there ought to be minutes of closed session. There ought to be a record of any sort of action taken in closed session, because of course anything that we produce in terms of minutes, record, or whatever, it's going to be subject to the public records law. And so I don't want to get in the habit of recording in written form what we're doing in closed session unless we have to. If we have to have a record, we'll create a record. If we don't, we don't. And so again, you'll see that I've replaced out this concept of minutes of closed session with record for closed session. Meetings. Time and place, organizational meeting. A lot of this is just borrowed from the statute in terms of what the organizational meeting does. What what the statute currently contemplates is an organizational meeting every year. I think that the tradition in Kenosha County, and frankly, in 71 other counties, is to have an organizational meeting every 2 years after the election. That's when we have leadership, the county board, set committees, and so on. And so we, here we have a recognition that it happens in election years. And then you'll also see throughout this rule the changes to provide the duties of the board chair, the board vice chair, and so on. Those are established by statute, what we have in here. There's nothing stopping the board from assigning additional duties, and that's recognized within the rules. If we turn to the fourth page of the rules at the top, we have a new section about appointing, excuse me, removing members from committees and removing members as chair of committees. That's a question that arrives, that comes up often in counties, is, well, who has the authority to remove members of the committee? And I always say, well, it depends on how those members are appointed to committees, because the power of appointment carries with it the power of removal. What I recommend to counties is that we have a process for removal. And you can have a process that involves discretion of the board chair. It can be a vote by the county board. It can be removal for cause. I mean, you can have whatever you like. What I prefer is an expedient process. Expedient meaning that if we want to remove somebody from a committee or remove that designation as chair, that it be by board chair. You can have a confirmation vote from the county board if that's what you desire. But I like it to be an expedient process, because I don't want to go through a two-meeting cycle or three-meeting cycle to have the removal occur. There might be a reason that we want somebody removed from the committee. So again, not looking for specific direction, but think about how it is that we have committee chairs and committee members removed from those chairs or committees.
Karen, I'm going to go back, because if it's in here, I overlooked it for the first time looking at it. When we just have a regular meeting, that's like the first and the third Tuesdays, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is there anywhere in here, I did not see going through, is that who can call and how do we call an emergency meeting? I could just go back to what happened during the riots and nobody knew what to do. Not that I was on the board at that time, you know, it's just sort of after the fact. And then also we just experienced, again, I wasn't on the board then, but meeting online. Is there guidance in this anywhere? If it was, I completely overlooked it.
So if you look at 2.04 sub 5, which is on page 5, that's where we have the provision for special and emergency meetings. And we inserted a provision right now under the board rules. Section 59.11 sub 2 of the statutes allows for a special meeting to be called by petition signed by the majority of supervisors. You have that right under statute, and that's recognized within the rules. But then we added a provision that the board chair can call a special meeting. To your point, Mr. Chair, I think that's important, because if we have an emergency circumstance and we need to get the board together, how are we going to be able to circulate a petition calling for a special meeting? It's going to take time. So I think the board chair should have the authority to call a special meeting of the county board.
Right.
So that is added to these board rules.
And it was that petition, does that describe how that could be? Could that be an email that goes out or a text message that goes out and people just confirm?
Signed. It has to be signed.
Can it be signed electronically?
Not under the statute, no. If you want to, we can put that in the board rules. Absolutely. So
I like the idea, because if we had a circumstance, I mean, and it's already happened, if we had a circumstance like we did during the riots, and we could inform everybody with a text message or an email that we're sending out you a DocuSign document that, you know, for this, and you don't, you can, or, you know, there'll be an option, either check yes or no, whether you want this meeting. But under extreme circumstances, you know, it would be really hard to get for someone to drive around if there's riots going on or the roads are closed and people are scattered. We have a small county, right? Is Darren County or something else like that? You're driving around to get 13 signatures. It can take you 10 hours. all I'm just saying is I think there should be a provision for that, and also to allow technology to quicken that process
because if it's only one petition, it's not like you're gonna have two supervisors or three supervisors getting three or four signatures on different petitions, I wouldn't think, right?
I can certainly come up with some language for your consideration that would recognize that.
Yeah. Is it permissible by statute?
Yes. Well, I mean, we're creating a mechanism outside of the statute. So the okay. statute would still exist. We're
right.
not modifying the statute or modifying the process. This would be in addition.
Exactly what you just said. My time in the military procedures, you can always add to, you can't take away from. Is that right?
Okay.
All right, that's all I have regarding that. So, unless anyone else had something to say in that regard,
I think we have a question.
You're jumping around a bit, so I want to go back to the election of a chair. Mm-hmm. And then, if you continue, the board chair shall appoint a temporary county executive. Which board chair? The newly elected board chair, the prior board chair? Is it someone that was appointed prior? How is that? What's the mechanism that protects it from? Challenge.
That is actually in the statutes right now as it relates to the board chair's authority. I'm looking at the rule. Do you have the rule that you're looking at right now?
5912, but perform the duties set forth in 5912.
So if I may, Supervisor Bashrod, and I don't step on Andy's comments, but I think he's just delineating that as one of the powers of the elected board chair. It's not something that happens. There's been one instance, as far as I'm aware, in Kenosha County where that occurred is when former County Executive Alan Keel resigned. At the time, Supervisor Rose was serving as the board chair. He temporarily assumed the office of right. County Executive and then had to appoint somebody who had to be approved by the board.
Correct.
So I think it's just, you're just adding that as one of the statutory duties of the of the chair, correct?
Because that's the way 59.17 allows for the temporary filling of that vacancy.
Yeah, but to me it's clunky language because we're electing a board chair and then the board chair is also defining an executive in the event of replacement rather than a separate section that says in the event of an abdication of the executive office, then the chair.
I think that's a great point because what I was struggling with, if you see the crossed out language, it said originally the board chair assumes the emergency powers bestowed upon the county executive in the absence of the executive.
Correct.
And but there's no authority for that in statute. But after conversation with the Corporation Council, my understanding was, well, no, that's recognition of 59.17's provision that says if you don't have a county executive, the board chair appoints. So with your permission, I wouldn't mind pulling that out and creating a separate section just to clarify.
I would appreciate that.
As long as we're looking at that section, and Andy sort of went over it, because it's probably one of the least vital parts of this, but there's what I would consider really to be historical relic language in the sections on the duties of the chair and the vice chair, mm-hmm. referencing long past practice of the board where they would, as a matter of course, alternate. So if you had a chair from the city, you had a vice chair from the county and vice versa. At some point they said, we're not gonna do that anymore. We're free to elect anybody we want to without referring to this informal rotation process. And the language was placed in there, I think, to confirm a negative, if you will. We're not doing this anymore. I don't know that it's necessary to leave that language in the rule any further. I think Andy agrees with me, but again, ultimately it's the board who makes that call, not us.
That's correct. If you want it in there to provide history, I understand. It's certainly not needed, but that's up to you as to whether you want to delete that. I would just like direction from this committee about what you think is right to be presented to the board.
I think the cleaner the better.
I like cleanliness.
I would think not having it in there assumes there is no protocol. If you wanted a protocol, you would put it in there.
That's right.
All right, where else are you going to take us here, Andy?
2.04, section 4, this session. And this is always a hang-up for counties. I say it's a hang-up because we want to figure out
what things die upon the end of the session, what things survive, and I know that Kenosha County, the board has a practice of adjourning sin die at certain points, and we consider certain meetings to be a continuation of the annual meeting, which happens in November. And you can do it that way, that's fine. There's nothing you've been doing is wrong. But what I would prefer is to say a session of the board is the 2 year that is commensurate with the 2 year term of each supervisor. And so anything that is done as of the meeting prior to the April election, it dies, so to speak, if it's not adopted by the board. And then we start fresh with the new board, so it's a 2 year session. This impacts rules relating to reconsideration of items, rescission of items, amending things previously adopted. In other words, there's a whole series of rules and Robert's rules that are impacted by the definition of session. So regardless of what you decide a session ought to be, I would highly recommend defining what a session is. And in my mind, the logical definition is the 2 year term that's commensurate with the supervisor's term.
Supervisor Burke.
So I don't know if I heard this right. You're suggesting 2 years, and at the end of the meeting before the April election, everything essentially dies. If we do the annual meeting in November and we adjourn some die, does the action of adjourn some die automatically kill everything?
Mm-hmm.
Or die or
currently that's what we're doing. Yeah.
Yeah, I know that. I just wanted to know, you know, if there was an extra meeting I wasn't aware of. Okay.
Yeah, we will be altering that practice.
Okay.
Now, in our case, the election is the beginning of April, and then new supervisors are sworn in until the third week of April.
Mm-hmm.
So, technically, would the session go up until the third week of April?
It would. I misspoke.
Yeah. Okay,
I said
so
right before
fine.
The election.
Sure.
You're right. It's right before the organization meeting when we get sworn. When I say die, I mean a resolution that hasn't been adopted. I don't mean things that have been adopted, die. I mean that a resolution that's pending for a given committee, once the new session starts, that resolution goes away.
Do you have a question?
I have a question from an appointment workflow. Does that change the scenario? Does that change the scenario? So right now, it becomes very difficult to get county executive appointments through the committee process when the board adjourns two times and that because the understanding is that if the appointment doesn't make it through, then it has to be correct. So would this help remedy that?
It seems like it would, yes.
At least I've got one fan in
there. There's also an issue if you look at our budget, because our budget actually isn't adapted. It works through committee at the beginning in October, we'll just date, and then we actually adjourn sin die in November before the budget is passed. So technically, that budget should have been killed and had to be reintroduced. So that's one big problem that with adjourning sin die in November, and that's why I believe we need to get rid of it.
This is a much better solution.
Oh, good.
So just as we go forward here, I mean, we're not like officially voting on anything. Is there sort of a general consensus amongst the two-year?
I like it. What are there any potential drawbacks of? Are there any pros and cons of how we're doing it now versus? I like everything we're discussing. I was kind of hoping for this sooner, but.
Here's the drawback. Theoretically, somebody introduces a measure in May of an election year, and it's defeated. So 1 month after the new board is defeated, it is defeated. A year and a half later, somebody brings it back to the board, and then the question is, have you already disposed of that particular measure because you voted it down May a year and a half ago? And the question is, well, are there changed circumstances such that it could be brought back before the board? So you might run into some of that.
But if the resolution has changed substantially or even changed a little
absolutely,
bit, it can be,
fine.
Then it's new.
That is fine.
Okay.
I'm going to move us along.
Okay.
Because we have 40 minutes and we have a whole
I'm trying to take up all of Sam's.
Could have started at 4.
All right. I'm flipping again. Stop me if I go too far. I get to page 8, and at the bottom, no chairman of the standing committee may serve on the finance and administration committee. I think that's a historical practice within the county. My question is that a good rule? Don't need to answer it now. Think about it and tell me if it's a good rule. Same on the next page, on page 9. No supervisor shall simultaneously serve as the chair of a standing committee and as the chair of a county-affiliated board, committee, or commission. On page 10, we've got some different language changes that, again, are intended to provide an efficient way of keeping a record of proceedings, posting to the website, and so on. I have the question here. It says no portion of any closed session shall be posted unless and until the confidentiality of any such recording is no longer necessary. We can have a rule that says we don't post closed session, and I'm good with that. Then we don't have to make a decision when is it no longer necessary to keep this confidential. Obviously, somebody may make a records request, and that's why you pay your corporation counsel exorbitant sums of money to make those decisions. I forgot your story.
Must be a different county.
And that's fine from a public record standpoint, but I don't know that we should have a rule that automatically posts it, and who makes that decision that it's no longer confidential. So I would suggest deleting that provision. But again, that's something. Did you have a question?
Quickly, on page 8, mm-hmm. 3B, you have added the wording unless otherwise determined by the board chair, provided such determination is confirmed by the county board. Why are we adding that when that would mean that we could have a county board supervisor on no committees?
Right, and I've seen counties where they don't want one of the supervisors on a committee. The entire board thinks that supervisor is just too problematic on any committee. And so I wanted a mechanism to keep somebody off a committee, because as soon as we have a rule, it takes amending the rule in order to create the exception. So I wanted to build in an exception mechanism. You don't have to have it. You
okay.
can say that every supervisor has to be on a committee, and I'll live with that. But I've just seen it play out in other counties where it's been problematic.
Okay, thank you. Page 11, letter E, I believe that should be letter G, just catch that, I believe, if I know if my alphabet.
You are correct.
Okay. And then were you on page 13, or not yet?
Not yet.
Okay.
On page 11, I just want to point out, because there have been questions about how do items get onto the county board agenda, how do items get onto a committee meeting agenda. And you'll see here that as it relates to the item that Supervisor Becker was just commenting on, item G, no item may be scheduled for inclusion on the agenda for a committee meeting without the consent of the committee chair, period. I left that as not a formal process intentionally, because I think there ought to be some latitude given on the creation of an agenda for a committee meeting. You may disagree and say there ought to be a formal process for creating a committee agenda. In other words, if a member of this committee or a member of the county board says this needs to be on the agenda, okay, then it goes on the agenda. That's fine. That's kind of the process that we have for the board agenda, all right? But I left that intentionally simple and direct in terms of who's responsible for the agenda for committee meetings. Again, you don't need to answer tonight, but if you don't like that process, let me know so that I can change that. But I do think it important that we have some process for who's responsible for an agenda for a board meeting and a committee meeting, and we have clarity about how an agenda gets put together. Anybody comment on that? Supervisor, you.
Not on that, but going back to page 9 and item 8, where it says no supervisor shall simultaneously serve as chair of the standing committee and as chair of the county affiliated board, committee, or commission. Does that include commercial direct services?
Is that a condition?
It is not a commission county board committee. It's made up of the city and the county as a quasi form of government.
But it's a county affiliated commission.
It is not.
I can make the argument that it is.
And this is why we pay lawyers. I've argued that
exorbitant.
I've argued that it is the board of a the governing body is a separate entity of which the county is a part, but it's not affiliated in the way the language was intended. That meant other county, solely county bodies.
And I agree. I think that interpretation is perfectly legitimate. I just question, what is a county affiliated board of community or commission? Because I can make an argument that that Joint Services Commission is. All right? I just want clarity in the rules.
Okay, because I would like it to state that Kenosha County, the Kenosha Joint Services Board is not a county committee. I would like that in there. Because there always seems to be every couple of years an issue with that. So I think it needs to be in here stated clearly that it is not a committee or a commission of the Kenosha County Board.
That clarifies it nicely.
Yeah. I mean, we wouldn't, because we have someone on the library board, that doesn't mean we're affiliated with the library.
I would agree.
And there has been a time where we have gone into executive session at Kenosha Joint Services, and the chairman of the county board wanted to sit in on those executive sessions. I, as chair, did not allow him because he is not part of a joint services board. So that's why I would like it clear, just so people understand. And I also know we had a chairman of finance who was also the chair of joint services at one time, and there was a big hoopla about that. And again, it just needs to be stated clearly that Kenosha Joint Services is not affiliated with a committee or commission of the county board.
I'm going to talk with your corporation counsel on maybe providing definition to this term of the rule.
Okay.
Because there might be a way to do it without just singling out the joint services.
But I do want it singled out, because
I understand.
Every couple of years this comes up, and it takes up a lot of Joe's time.
Sure.
So I think we need to make it clear for everyone how Kenosha Joint Services, even though we have two designees on there, how it affects these standing committees.
Does anyone else have any other thoughts on that? Go ahead, Sam.
Well, does it just come into any consideration? Correct me if I'm wrong, but does joint services not come to the county for budgetary approval for some of their items? Does that make
they
it special in some way?
They go to the county and the city.
So they go in both the county and the city. Mm-hmm. Just looking back at our other rules as far as not being able to serve on financing committees, maybe that's a mechanism to clarify it, because that joint services is a commission, whatever it is, that comes to the county board and gets approval for the budgets. That's another layer to it that just popped up, maybe could help clarify it in that way too.
But then you'd also have two supervisors voting on a budget, which encompasses joint services.
Unless you
would like those supervisors not to vote.
That's what I mean, is that needs the definition, because of that layer of they're also approving the budget as well. That committee is coming to the board for budget approval.
Do we actually approve the joint services budget, or do we, it's presented to the finance committee, and they approve the allocation of money to pay for their budget?
Right, the portion that's approved by the finance committee and the board is the point that the county is being charged.
Right, we do not approve the
budget.
And the other thing is, I'll just say, and again, not to disagree with anything that's been said, it is certainly also an option to take that out completely and not retain that as part of the rules. As an example, currently this would mean that somebody who was the chair of a standing committee couldn't chair a temporary committee or a special committee put together for a limited purpose. Under this rule, that can't occur. Maybe this is a rule that no longer serves a useful purpose.
Well, do you know why this has been in effect?
It was requested by Kim Bruning when she was the chair, and I don't remember what her reasoning for it was.
Well, do you think you guys have enough information where you can hash it out before we meet? Unless you tell me that the rule just ought to be eliminated. No, that's what I'm saying. You can weigh eliminating it or weighing, as Supervisor Uhas indicated.
Well,
Why don't we do that? I can talk with Joe about that, and then you all can decide.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. We don't need to hash it out right here.
I agree.
Yeah. What page do you want us to go to?
Let's go to page 12. We'll get the meeting. This follows the thing earlier about who creates the agenda. Right now, the board chair creates the agenda in consultation with the county clerk. Will you see any sort of enhanced authority as it relates to the county clerk, whether it be agenda, posting the agenda, whatever? That's all because I tried to bring the rules into compliance with 59.23 of county clerk's duties. On page 13, I have a comment. Right now, the board chair controls the agenda. If the county board were to say at the end of a meeting, I want this item on the next meeting agenda, and then voted affirmatively to place on the agenda, the board chair has to place on the agenda. So in other words, the board has the authority to tell the chair. My question for this committee and the county board ultimately is, do we want a separate mechanism to get things on the agenda? We don't have to have one. Not needed. But think about whether we want to have a process where how a member requests that an item be put on an agenda, whether it be through a committee, request to the board chair, whatever the case may be. Yeah. Anyone have it? Yeah, go ahead.
So right now, if someone wants an item on an agenda, they submit it, it goes to the committee chair, and then it goes through the appropriate committee. And then once it's been taken up in committee and either passed or, and then it goes on to the county board. So it's.
We'll have to go to the county board first to get referred back to the
right,
committee.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
So that's not in the rules, though.
They're separate things.
The current chairman's process. If that's not in the rules, that it has to go to the board and then get referred to committee. That's not in the rules.
Correct.
Because prior to this chairman, we didn't do it that way.
Okay.
We did. I was just going to say we did it under Esposito and this chairman, but no other chairman.
Yeah.
So which one? So that creates a question. And so as you explained it, we could have it on the agenda from the committee and then have it go up to the board, right, to vote on. Right now it's going through the chair, down referred to a committee. Right, is that what I just understood? We're doing it differently than it was just done to you.
Correct.
If I can add something about that. There's, the chair of the committee can absolutely put stuff on his agenda, his or her agenda. Now, it's actionable items that would have to be referred down. So do we need to separate that? Do we need to define that? Is that some Robert's rules? So one of the things that we have that I've heard a lot of over my 8 years is through a lot of folks don't learn the Robert's rules, or it takes a while to learn the Robert's rules, often by practice or going to the WCA conference. Can you put some Robert's rules into here, not changing the definition or the meaning of it?
Sure. So for example, if you wanted as a committee to vote to make sure that the chair of the committee puts something on the agenda for the next meeting, you can do that. You can put that here.
Right, and that's Robert's rules.
Robert's rules recognizes that already. You can put that in the board rules. So that's what you'd like to see.
And then with the, because I think some of the discussion here is to put something on the agenda has to go to the county board chair, and it's not actually accurate. Some actionable items have to go to the county board chair. The committee chair can play other things, you know, whether it's people coming in to speak or a tour or, you know, whatever that be.
So in along that line, I think, could someone present a resolution at a committee, and then if it gets passed, then it goes to the county board?
You could do that if that's what you want to do. The way that the process works now,
that's how it was, not under Esposito and not under Chair Nico. Because in the past, not under those two, I would email the chair with a resolution and the chair of the committee and say, can you please put this on the agenda for the next meeting? And it would go directly to the committee and then get approved and then go to the floor.
Okay. So that's been a preferential thing then?
Yeah, it's completely what the process now is, the chairman's
preference.
For a couple months.
Well, it has been, and it was under us.
And I think they do that because it gives the county board supervisor a heads up as to what's coming down the road, what's going to committee.
Are things not being put on the agenda because the county board chair said no?
Well, I think there was pushback back then, wasn't there a little bit about not having enough time to be able to look at a resolution or whatever the piece coming through was, and I think that's why it was changed, so, I mean, for me, it seemed like it worked fine then, works fine now.
I agree, I remember it that way too.
Supervisor Stock, you have a comment?
I like the current process, I think it's very transparent, it's very helpful for all of us to be able to see what's coming. My question being, if we are changing the rules to stipulate one way or the other, the question that has to be answered, the process that has to be established is, any supervisor could take a resolution to any committee that maybe he or she feels has the best chance of passing, but maybe is irrelevant to the committee. I know with the current process, my understanding is that the chair consults with Corporation Council on what's the best committee for that resolution, and that's the process that resolution then flows. That's my understanding of the process, but if you change that or change the rules so that, you know, that other thing is the option, that's something that's gonna have to be addressed, is who decides what resolution goes to what committee.
I like the current process. I like the consultation with Corp Council and then the referral. Let's make sure it's codified, and Joe, do you remember, we had it in here, I thought, didn't we? Did we not have it, consultation with Corp Council?
No.
Consultation with Corp Council, a couple things, I don't know.
Let's say that.
Yeah.
The issue though is if it's codified, then there have been things that we had to, for a time, like a grant for the police, the sheriff's department, that we had to bring it up in committee before it got referred, or before it went to the county board floor. So I like having the option where if the chair wants to do it the way we're doing it now, they can, and that gives us the flexibility where if something is of very dire time constraints, we don't have to, because otherwise you have to wait to even, and you even have to wait to suspend the rules to be able to do that. Because you'd have to suspend the rules on the county board floor, which at the same time then you just refer it to committee anyway.
206 sub 4 addresses.
No, that's coming from committee to the floor.
Yeah, in consultation with Dennis in terms of matters of time sensitive nature requiring the board's attention, in which case the board chair may place the item on the agenda for regular meeting without committee consideration. So you can circumvent it through the chair.
But that's not going to committee. We want it to still go, this is about having it go to committee, then the floor. That is saying, we're skipping the committee and going to the floor.
Because it's of such time-sensitive matter.
Right, but we still want it the other way around, so the committee can vote on it and then send it to the floor and just bypass the having it in the floor to get referred to the committee.
I think I understand the concern, I do, and I think that Joe and I can work on some language about that. Do you have some insight, Patty?
I was just going to show you right now with the referral process that we use, it is in the chair's hands that if something is brought to his attention that it's a time sensitivity, he has the ability to waive that referral process. He does not like to exercise it, so it really has to be a good case. But the situations like you described where there's a time sensitivity to something, he will allow it to go on committee agenda as long as the chair of the committee is okay with that and move forward that way.
And just for that meetings, type of before a board meeting, we've had finance meetings right before a county board meeting, get a grant asked, so it's ready taken up at 7:30.
Page 15 is the big one, sub 10. I want you to consider this. I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about it, but I would like to see the board adopt rules for citizen comment. We have rules already for citizen comment that are out there, but they're not the board rules. I love having board rules. I love having codified ordinance that puts the public on notice of expectations. Item B and 10B, all comments must be germane to an item on the meeting agenda. I love that rule. Others don't like it because they think, well, it's not for citizens to tell us what's going on. I, as a lawyer, see danger, danger, danger all over that. So I like limiting comments from the citizens that items that are on the agenda. So take a look at those rules for citizen comment. Again, these are imported from what you already have. They're just in the board.
Quick question. What if you have a speaker at the podium who gives a false address? Because it's
assess residential address. We're not asking for a business address, we're not asking for anything else.
What does the chair have the power to do if you know that that's not the correct address?
I think you can inquire of the speaker as to if that's their actual address. I frankly don't know if the First Amendment would allow you to impose a requirement that somebody disclose their address before providing public comment. That's a question. I think the reason we want that is we want to know what constituency is expressing their views. Where do they live? Where, you know, and so I think the chair can inquire, but I don't know how hard I'd press that. Now, Joe, you have different feelings.
No, I agree, and I've advised in the past. I don't think we can compel anyone to provide us an address or an accurate.
Well, should the wording be changed? It says must. It says must.
It should just say provide an address. It shouldn't say residential because obviously we're not enforcing it. It should just give an address.
And I think part of it too is putting the public on notice of expectations. Is that you're supposed to give an address. If they don't, we may not enforce. But the expectations they provide an address. Again, it's up to you as to what you want to see on that. If they refuse or give a wrong address, there's not much we can do about it.
I just think the word residential should come out.
We can do that because you're right. Commercial property, they won't get an address.
I would like to see that stricken. Mr.
Chair?
Which item is that? That's on A.
On A,
yes.
Yep. Supervisor Deckard?
Personally, I have an issue with issue B. I mean, if you're the chairman and you're sitting up there and someone talks about something, you're just going to shut them up and say, sorry, you can't speak on the issue because it's not on the agenda. What happens if they're bringing forward an issue that they want us to know about? You can just gavel them down and say, too bad, it's not on the agenda. You need to agenda it. I do not like B. But also, we don't have in our rules that I can see a time limit. Do we need to have a time limit? In the rules?
You don't need to, but I think you can have one if that's important.
Is that something we want? I'm just throwing that out there.
It's a good question.
Because sometimes we do 5 minutes and sometimes we do three. Do we want to put that wording in there that it's at the discretion of the chair? Do we want to leave it? Just throwing that out there as a thought.
The only thing I would say on item B is that if a constituent wants to raise a concern, email it. That's fine. The reason I don't like comments outside of agendized matters is that it leads to open meetings concerns, it leads to concerns surrounding the appropriateness of comments and so on that I'd rather avoid. It's just easier
to I understand. From a legal, exactly.
I have my role, so that's why. Go ahead, Mark, Supervisor Bench.
Well, then they ask for clarification because I'm agreeing with Supervisor Becker on it. This specific agenda doesn't encompass the agendas that are before the board through its committees, et cetera, and business that we're currently addressing. So it's a very narrow, finite agenda that's in front of the public at that given moment when I couldn't make it to that committee meeting, but I want to talk about it. And I want to make my voice heard. So we're telling the public we don't want your voice. So to me, it's a little bit narrow. That we really restrict comment to this agenda item tonight.
I understand that. Thank you, sir. I do.
In your professional experience, do other counties incorporate that practice?
Yes. It is mixed. Some do, some don't. For the very reasons we've discussed, different people have different points.
I would like to avoid having people come up and talk about their campaign when they come up. So if we could keep it germane to the agenda, that would be it.
The other thing I don't like is people have a tendency to come up and complain about something you did 2 months ago. It's done. Nothing we can do about it. It's done. And so that's the other issue I see.
Or something that has nothing to do with the county.
That never happens.
It's a city issue.
Just us. Okay, all right.
It's just you.
You're the only open government.
So just in regards to this, if we were to put something in here that as the chair's discretion, citizens' comments, individual comments cannot exceed 5 minutes, and then they could go down to two or one or three or four.
Citizen comments per speaker is at the chair's discretion.
Yeah.
the citizen comment period cannot go over 45 minutes or an hour?
No.
Without the chairs extending it?
Well, that's already implied right now, so.
We don't.
Except the chair rule.
Is that we're cutting certain people off?
Right.
Yeah.
We're discriminating on that.
But you don't wanna cut people off time-wise, but you wanna cut them off by what they can speak? Just saying.
All right, we live in America, we have to write the rules. 2.08. A lot of what you see from here on is budget and finance. In 2.08, we have the budget process, I believe, is that right? Can we just take those that are here, look through the next remaining pages of more, this is cookie cutter stuff, and look through and see if anyone has any questions. I do wanna get to the ethics one and be able to spend as much time as possible. I was gonna say that finance and budget went through your finance department to make sure that we were wanting to comply with statute and to comply with practice, so I don't think there's anything controversial in there. But yes, let's take a look, because you do have another ordinance to look at.
Can you clarify one, hold on, sorry.
Nope.
We changed to $10,000 in finance, is, have we run on, up against situations where we haven't had enough authority, or?
$25,000.
Or $25,000.
I changed it to what the statute allows.
Okay, thank you.
You don't have to follow that, you can make it lower, you can make it greater, but that's what I did.
But that works.
Supervisor Dethman?
Page 16, down way at the bottom, right at the last black section, it says having such resolution ordinance or policy statements mailed. Can we say sent, because we don't mail them? And then on the next page, number 5 at the bottom, unless I'm interpreting this wrong, this is just saying online that our ordinances and the procedure listing, it doesn't list the wording of the ordinance. It only lists like the ordinance number. And we had discussions in finance committee about previously when we had the ordinance books printed, it actually had the entire ordinance words in it. So you could read all the ordinances and all the words, not just the headlines. Currently online, and others in the committee did not like how it is, because right now the wording is not in there. It's not even the title of the ordinance. It's just the ordinance number, and you click on it and it brings up the ordinance. What happens if that link is broken? And number 2, you can't do a search for, I'm trying to think, canine, because there's no wording in there that says canine. It just says resolution 304. Or whatever. So I do not like this wording. This is the opposite in my interpretation of what we discussed at the finance committee.
Is that subsided?
Yes.
Yeah, and that's the current rule. And all I did is add the statute section relating to what we have to publish. So yes, if you want something better, different,
yes,
let me know what that looks like.
Okay.
And who will that be? Do you want to say something, or is that Patty? Who would you like to? I just want to know who's going to send it to.
How about I send it to Joe?
Okay, all right. I just want to leave here and say we talked about that and then we'll come back. Is there anything else on the rules? Let me point out real quick, 2.08 sub 6. That is the statute that is the process for submitting to the executive for approval. If there's a veto, we have to have a board meeting to have an override vote. There's no discretion, you have to do that. So I wanted to make sure that was in the rules. Because it was a little bit murky to me in the current rules as to whether that occurs. And since this is just strictly advisory, got a little tied there, we would be allowed individually to send any of our concerns that we didn't cover in this to Joe for their consideration. So,
and I will forward them to Attorney
Phillips. So feel free to do that. Let's go on to the next one. So you have it. Thank you all for the 15 minutes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Andy. Joe, if you want to set the table here.
Just very, very quickly, mainly because we now running short on time. As I believe most of the supervisors here know, this was one of the things that I talked about for some time. I'm not aware of any substantial review of the two ethics codes, probably since they were adopted. There may have been little tweaks here and there, but nothing substantial. I contacted Attorney Hall, who we've worked with on a number of projects, to review. I'm pleased to say that the first thing he told me was we were very much in line with what he was seeing in other counties. And then based on a couple of sessions that we had with the executive committee, as well as a couple of individual meetings with supervisors who expressed specific interest, Sam has put together this draft, and I will let him then sort of set the table a little bit further.
Thank you. So I'm currently of two ethics ordinances with two different sections, and when I started working on this project, we kind of left open what we would do. We would just go in and edit and amend what you currently have, scrap the entire thing and start over. And what we ended up doing was a little bit in recommending is that we reduce the single code that applies both to elected officials, county board members, and county employees as well. But we made an awful lot of modification along the way as well to clarify some things and to bring it in line with what we've seen elsewhere. Fundamentally, when you look at an ethics code, and folks on the executive committee have heard the spiel from me before, but ethics codes kind of exist in a middle place where state law already provides what misconduct in public office is and what truly criminal conduct is that, you know, is punishable by prison. And then on the other end of the spectrum, we have things that may be politically incorrect, that politically we don't like, and those aren't intended to be weaponized through an ethics code. Ethics codes don't exist to score political points, but they do exist within all local governments to provide kind of that middle ground between what is not criminal and what is not truly misconduct in public office, but is also something more than just you know, something politically unpopular or something that we don't like. And so that's, you know, really the spirit of all of this is where this code ends up. Since we're short on time, what I just would mention is that structurally this is set up with kind of two parts. First is the rules. You know, what are the ethical rules? Those rules are detailed. I think they're relatively clear, and they're not, you know, every county and city, you know, has some uniqueness within their ordinance, but they're to be expected. They're kind of obvious. And then there's the enforcement. The enforcement side of it is where there's a great deal of variety between various ethics codes. And where we landed here is an ethics code that largely rests the enforcement in the hands of the Corporation Council and ultimately the District Attorney. And so when you see the enforcement, what we're looking at is if something's not yet occurred, and it's kind of, can I do this? Will this violate the ethics code? Corporation Council has a full authority to address that, provide an opinion in advance of it. Once something has already occurred, and so there may already be a violation of law, the way this is structured right now is that it would go to the Corporation Council, and Corporation Council would refer it to either outside counsel or send it directly to the District Attorney's Office. Ultimately, this is an ordinance with an enforceable provision of a fine, and the district attorney would be responsible for actually prosecuting that if that were to be necessary. You'll see other jurisdictions they'll form ethics committees or, you know, an ethics body, or they'll refer to the executive committee. It's my opinion that that is not helpful or useful for a lot of different reasons that we went through with the executive committee. I think the executive committee agreed that it was a better approach to avoid doing that. And that's what you currently have now. You currently do not use an ethics committee. And so that's the way we left it. But with that, I feel like we're on the home stretch here. I think, you know, again, I would expect that there are still some changes, some things to be discussed, but I think we're getting close. Rather than going through this line by line and recognizing that you all have another meeting and 12 minutes.
you know, I've kind of laid out the structure. Are there specific questions that anyone has? Supervisor, you have.
I'd like to see something in here for supervisors that they have to sign an affidavit of residency when they take office. And the reason I say that is because sometimes supervisors move out of their district while they're serving a term, and they're not always forthcoming that they're living outside of their district. And as you know, residency is hard to prove. We're held to a higher standard, but yet some like to circumvent that standard. So we already signed an economic statement of interest. I'd like to see an affidavit of residency as well.
So to be clear, this is your ordinance, and I will do what you want. Let me just mention this. Traditionally, with ethics codes, we try not to overlap. You know, if somebody does something that's illegal, and you would say, okay, this violates state statute, this violates the ethics code, it's not usual to see that, okay, well, this violates all three of them, right? If somebody is elected and holding office, and they do not reside in the district that they reside in, they're violating the law. They're violating state statutes.
But law enforcement agencies are not necessarily going to go after it.
But the other point I would make is that your enforcement mechanism here is the district attorney. Okay, so if they violate the ethics code, because let's assume we put this provision in that says you have to sign an affidavit attesting to where you live, and they just refuse to do it, let's say. You know, because presumably they would do that rather than commit perjury. They would just say, I'm not submitting. Ultimately, if you're going to enforce the ethics code, it goes to the district attorney to pursue with the prosecution. If they don't live in the district that they assert that they would, that same district attorney would have the enforcement power there too. So if the concern is that the district attorney's office isn't taking that serious, that they're not going to prosecute, just because we put it in the ethics ordinance doesn't mean they're going to prosecute it either.
And the same could be said for the statement of economic interest as well. So I really would like to see it, because when you submit your forms in December, your election's not until April. Things happen. Sometimes people move. That's why I really think that affidavit of residency is important to have.
So is there, if I could, is there a mechanism for the county board chair to censure or whatnot until an affidavit's done?
Well, the board chair wouldn't censure. The board could. The other thing is, we're talking about this. I was not anticipating this question, so I am thinking on my feet here. The statement of economic interest includes your acts. You know, the filings.
But it does
with
when you
election.
File it in December.
I see. But you have a continuing under this. You have a continuing obligation.
But people don't. Yeah. Which is why I'm saying, when you take office in April, you sign an affidavit of residency. It's a piece of paper. It shouldn't be a big deal to sign it and have it notarized at the clerk's office. There's a 4-month gap between the document you submitted and what you have now. And if we rely on elected officials to do the right thing, a lot of times we don't. So
there have been cases where people have held office where they don't live in their district.
Absolutely. I'm well aware. Yeah.
The other concern I would have, though, is they sign an affidavit the day they take office. What if they move a month into their term? I mean,
then they should let the clerk know that they've moved, because the records have to be updated on the website. The address should be updated with the clerk's office anyways.
But that's my point, is they already have those obligations.
But they don't do that.
So
I'm trying to hold them to
that. So in saying that, there's already state statute of references. Can we just reference the state statute in here?
No, I want them to sign something.
Well, I know what you want, but that's, you don't always get what you want. I'm just asking, if because we reference state statutes and a lot of other things. Is it just referencing the state statute? So I'm just asking, because this hasn't just been brought up. I'm just trying to think of how we're referencing other things, saying here it is, but then here's the state statute that references it as well. we could certainly do that. I mean, we inherent within this, we already referred to the ethics code. So there's the state statutory ethics code. Rely on that. Can we, I don't want to take all the time talking about this. Can
I'll leave that up to you and Joe?
I understand your point. I don't disagree. I'm just asking as well. So is there anything else in the body of this or anything else that anyone has comments or suggestions on?
Page 19-10, the third paragraph, so like line 440. The red crossed out area, why are we removing that? Because the way I read it, that's like the only enforcement mechanism we have of doing this economics, the statement of interest or whatever it's called. The penalty.
Are you referring to 440?
Yes.
Okay.
We decided that was illegal?
We did decide that was illegal.
Okay. All right.
Sorry, it took me a minute.
That's a good answer. And then, okay, so then after the red part.
Darn it all.
That's why we added the statutory provision at the end to say what we are permitted to do under statute is keep them off.
Okay, but this I'm not, okay, do we really want to keep someone off the ballot when they don't fill out a statement of economic interest in time? Is that really something we want to do? Just throwing that out there. I mean, it's not like a huge, we'll get it from them later, we should. And there's no penalty for employees. We're not throwing them off the ballot. So what happens if an employee doesn't fill out a statement of economic interest?
Then they would be in violation of the ethics code and would be subject to a $1,000 fine.
Okay.
Not to mention other. Under the, I don't think that the work rules anymore. It's the code of conduct or whatever. So I mean, there'd be other provisions.
So it's
that
just
apply.
Not stated in here.
Yeah.
Okay, but I'm just. Do we really want to make it so if they don't fill out their ethics form that they don't get on the ballot? Just throwing that out there.
Yeah, and while you were speaking, I just double checked the statute. The state statute is
it permits us. Permits, I read it.
It doesn't. Yep. It doesn't kick in. So.
And so the Wisconsin Elections Commission would rule against you keeping someone off the ballot just because they didn't submit.
No, state statute, like he said, it says we can do it as long as we have a rule to do it. So then the WEC wouldn't be allowed to say because we're allowed to do it.
Great time to go.
Anyone else have anything as they look through here? The one thing that I want to point out two things. One is we currently have two code of ethics, one for employees and one for elected officials or for the county board. So this blends the two together now. If you weren't aware of that, if you saw on the top, it X's out and sort of includes everybody. The one thing that I don't see in here is that how can a citizen, there should be a procedure or something on how a citizen the county can file something and what those steps look like. When I've looked over this part of the when I was on the county board, it's like, how do you do that if you're just a regular guy and you are upset with an elected official or someone that works for the county as an employee? What does that look like? What are the steps you're supposed to do to make it, let's call it an ethics complaint for dummies type of thing. Because that's what I needed, you know, back then. I don't know if something like that can be integrated into some aspect of this.
Well, don't they just go to the DA?
Well, I wouldn't. I wouldn't know where to go. I'm just saying you have to try to think of someone who's has some kind of issue and they look through this or they, you know, where would they turn to? That's what I'm just guessing.
So
I'm not guessing, but suggesting.
I apologize for cutting you off there. So at about line 320, tried to add some clarification as to how a complaint is made. So the complaint would go to the Corporation Counsel's office. And
we don't dictate, in this code, in this draft, we don't dictate the form. We don't, you know, require that it be in writing, we don't require that it be notarized. It could be an email, it could be a conversation. In drafting this, we felt that that was, for example, there is an ethics code of a different county that requires notarized sworn under penalty of perjury. Problem is, you're missing potentially viable legitimate complaints because people aren't wanting to go through that process. Sometimes somebody wants to make an anonymous complaint. We've seen that, you know.
Could we define that then? Because this is why I'm saying this, is that because the first step is whether for the corporate counsel to determine if it should be referred. And if someone has something that's valid, but they don't know how to fill it out or specify different things that would be pertinent to be considered, whether it's, you know, an ethics violation to be referred, we wouldn't want to not allow someone to fill or discourage them from filling it out if they don't know how to complain properly, lack of a better way to say it.
Let me revisit this section and see if we can tighten up the language. The only other point I would just like to make is I would be very cautious and leery of creating a form per se for individuals to fill out, or a link on a website for people to fill out. There's no initial review or initial finding here. Every complaint is going to the court counsel.
Right.
For either a review or for a referral for outside counsel. And so it's not that you don't want to make it easy for there to be complaints. You do. You want this to be user friendly. You want the public to be able to use it. But if it's too easy, or if it's too easily done in a frivolous way, you could end up in a situation where you have, you know, dozens and dozens of complaints to work through that don't have any merit. And some counties do face that.
But I
understand your point, Chair, and I think we can clean this language up. I don't know if this has ever been done before. We're starting upstairs. If someone wants to adjourn, but I think if anybody wants to stay late and be late for the county board meeting and still have any questions on this, we won't have a quorum if enough of you work for all. If you guys want to stay and you want to stay another 5 minutes, we only have 15 minutes to go over this, and it warrants much more time than that. And if we have to vote on this next month, you know, and make a referral to the county board, I want to take a few more minutes.
Maybe we could be a several hours.
I'm assuming you'll be able to come back. I'd have to check. I'll make myself available. Yeah. But the other thing is that, you know, we're happy that if you have questions or comments to give to the Corporation Council, we speak very regularly. Yeah. Okay. Does anyone have anything real pressing on here that they would like to ask? Okay. Well, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Thank you all very much for your patience. Thank you.
Oh,
sorry.
Yes, I'll work on that.
No, sorry you didn't have any stuff.
Yeah, no, that's okay. I'm glad we got